to all the labor centers to familiarize with themselves, with what they do, how they do it, and so that, whenever the engagement, you shouldn't say that I've never been to that region. So let's ac that's yeah, I think we should accept this apology, but there will come a time when you'll be finished with visiting all the regional offices. That thing will come to an end, and when it does, I'm convinced that he will give his time to attend meetings of the portfolio committee. There are just some few little things here where there are members who are always not available for meetings, and there are those without fail who will come in for 20 minutes and then from there disappear. I think we need to find a way of changing this. Today we on the program we have announcements, correspondence briefing by the Department of Labor towards the budgetary review recommendations report. And then I'll take this time because you're having a sitting in the afternoon, that we need to move faster so that we are not delayed. And I'm having another meeting later today, in the afternoon, around 2 o'clock, with the Ad-hoc Committee on Information Bill. So I'll give over to Mr. Kettledust and his team to brief us on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, committee members, honorable members. I have with me here the CFO, Mr. Becky Matuna, and David Kyle, the Director of Financial Management. I'll run through the presentation, and Mr. Matuna and Mr. Kyle have undertaken to deal with all the questions. Chairperson, we are responding to the Budget Review and Recommendation Report 2010, which is dated the 26th of October 2010. And the format of the presentation would be to respond to those issues raised. For example, the audit performance and the number of issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. Then there's the consideration of the reports of the Committee on Public Accounts, a number of issues there, the committee's observations, and then lastly dealing with the committee's recommendations. So the presentation cover all those areas. Starting with the audit performance issues, the department has, through concerted efforts, addressed the audit qualifications relating to the Triple-P assets during the 2010-11 financial year. And we can report now that in this respect, the Office of the Auditor General has issued an unqualified audit report on the financial statements for 2010-11. And that will be contained in our annual report, which should be tabled tomorrow. The department reported a contingent asset to a value of 5 million rand in the 2009-2010 financial year, and this was based on the department noticing that the unitary fee as charged by Siemens reflected a larger number of users than actually employed by the Department of Labor. The department could not disclose the amount in 2010-11 due to Siemens disputing the matter, and the department needs to substantiate the claim. The issue about the number of users, it could be that one user has two devices or three devices. You have a PC and you may also have a laptop. So in that case, it could be that there's a larger number of users reflected than actually the number of devices exceed the number of people using devices. So one user could be having more than one device, a laptop and a PC. The department's COO was tasked with evaluating the performance management processes within the department in this respect, policies relating to the quarterly monitoring and evaluation processes were re-emphasized in the need to ensure that source documentation and information substantiating such reported performance was inculcated into the department. Quarterly performance reports were compiled and submitted in line with the prescripts, and that process is continuing where there are quarterly monitoring reports. We, for example, have quarter one monitoring report, which is from April to June, quarter two, quarter three, and quarter four. So those reports are prepared on a quarterly basis, and then they are signed off by the relevant program managers. On governance structures and responsibilities, in an ongoing effort to ensure that the department is managed responsibly and ethically, reviews and updates are done for governance processes and practices. On the risk management approach, the risk management approach system and processes are embodied into the culture and practices of the organization. In the 2010-11 financial year, the department established the National Risk Management Committee to strengthen its risk management processes. The department has implemented processes to minimize conflict of interest. These processes are as a result of legislative requirements and best practices which we aim to enrich. All members of the senior management service are required to declare their business interests annually. This is a requirement that all SMS members must complete a declaration signed under oath by in front of a commission of oaths when they declare their interests on an annual basis. Critical to strengthening organizational integrity, and in addition to the above, pre-employment screening, vetting processes of both employees and service providers, declarations during recruitment processes, supply chain management practitioners signing the code of good conduct, and declarations by members of oversight committees have been implemented. So in this process you have, for example, the vetting processes. We have to refer those recommended candidates to NIA so that they are screened to see if there's any criminal record or any serious problems with those candidates. Pre-employment screening also checks, for example, the qualifications that people have to verify that those are legitimate qualifications, and that is done with SAPWA. The department has formalized a fraud prevention plan to prevent, detect, and investigate fraudulent activities and to protect assets and other resources from dishonest and unethical conduct. Fraud awareness campaigns were conducted with various sections and labor centers within the department, and the department has enhanced its reporting processes with the development of a whistleblowing policy. Now, turning to the report of the Committee on Public Accounts, in regard to capital assets, the department's asset management unit was fully capacitated, and a dedicated asset management unit official was appointed at each provincial office. On governance issues, a schedule is maintained regarding the commencement and completion of internal audits and the issuing of the final internal audit report. Information is provided annually to the audit committee, which includes the auditor general, enabling the committee to evaluate the effectiveness of the internal audit function. So at each of the audit committee meetings, there is a report from our internal audit unit. Follow-up audits regarding issues previously raised by internal audits were included in the annual audit plan for the 2010-11 financial year, and reports thereon were subsequently provided to management as well as to the audit committee. 5 vacant posts in the internal audit unit were filled during May and June last year to strengthen the capacity of the internal audit unit. On non-compliance with laws and regulations, strategic and operational risk assessments were conducted and reports are available. The National Risk Management Committee was established, as indicated earlier. The fraud prevention plan has been developed and approved. A risk monitoring is conducted on a continuous basis, and an action plan has been implemented to address the audit findings. Processes regarding the recovery of departmental debts have been established to continue with the Department of Legal Services Division. They would investigate the possibility of recovery of departmental debts. They would also liaise with the state attorneys where matters need to be referred to the state attorneys in pursuit of the recovery of debts, especially for people that have left the department. So there is those processes underway. Management implemented regular assessments of supply chain management performance to ensure that deficiencies are corrected, and the department addressed areas of responsibility and established lines of reporting in order to support effective internal control over financial reporting. Coming to the committee's observations, the department reflected a vacancy rate of 8.6% as of the 31st of March 2011. That is in response to the issue of the filling of vacancies. So at the end of the financial year, the vacancy rate stood at 8.6%. The filled post decreased from 3,495 in the 2007-08 financial year to 3,092 in the 2010-11 financial year, but it's expected to grow to 3,655 in the 2013-14 financial year. The decrease between the 2007-08 and the 2010-11 financial year is attributed to the transfer of about 372 posts from the Department of Labor to the Department of Higher Education and Training as a result of the transfer of the skills development functions. The increase over the MTS period is attributable to the strategy to professionalize the rate inspector, including the creation of additional posts and to improve the quality of service delivery and effectively meet the client requirements. In regard to the committee's observations, the department has attempted to address constraints regarding the payment processes relating to buildings and related expenditure claimed by the Department of Public Works, aimed at addressing the delays experienced in this regard. However, constraints are still encountered in respect of obtaining detailed expenditure in respect of individual buildings occupied by the department, and as such, delays in this area are still evident in respect of this classification of expenditure. That is an ongoing issue with the Department of Public Works. In terms of the department's financial statements for the 2010-11 financial year, it is evident that Veriman's, as permitted in terms of Section 43 of the Public Finance Management Act, was approved. An amount of 1.25 million rand was shifted from IES to Labour Policy and Labour Market Programs in order to increase the provision made for affiliation fees payable to the ILO. Now, this is an issue where we are continuously faced with exchange rate fluctuations. The affiliation fees of the ILO is in Swiss francs, and we pay in rands. So, for example, currently I think the exchange rate is 1 to 7. That for every 1 Swiss franc you have to pay 7 rands. Now, at the time that the affiliation fees are established, the inflation rate may be, I mean the exchange rate may be a particular rate, but when you actually pay the rate, the affiliation fee, the rate has changed. So that is, you can't always foresee to what extent the fluctuation will take place. An amount of 20.1 million rand was shifted from IAS to the Public Employment Services section in order to increase the provision made in respect of the self-employment factors. And that government, because it is from a program to a public entity, the approval had to be granted by National Treasury, which in this case was granted. The final betterment of 15.9 million rand from IAS, 5.01 million from Public Employment Services, and 7.9 million rand from labor policy to labor market programs. And labor market programs, to the administration component was approved by the accounting officer. This betterment was required in order to offset an overexpenditure which was recorded in respect of office accommodation that deals with the rental of buildings, lease agreements, and so on. Again, highlighting the need for the department to obtain reliable information from Public Works relating to leases for buildings occupied by the department. So that's a consequence of the previous problem that I had raised where we are not getting regular feedback from the Department of Public Works. Dealing with the committee recommendations, the second phase of the Charitable Training Factory's business case is currently in progress with the National Treasury Assistance, their Technical Assistance Unit, and it is envisioned that it will be finalized before the end of this financial year. The Employment Services Bill, as we are aware, has been released by Cabinet for public consultation and is currently in the NEDLAC process. That bill provides for the legal status or conferring the legal status on the shelter factories. And the conclusion of the business case and the passage of the bill will enable the department to finalize the organizational structure and the funding framework for that entity. As an interim measure aimed at addressing the concerns raised regarding the financial capabilities available at the shelter employment factories, a chief financial officer was appointed on contract to assist the shelter employment factories in ensuring compliance with the relevant financial prescripts and reporting formats. The department included in its 2011-12 MTA submission the funding requirements regarding the implementation of the professionalization of the inspectorate. This submission aimed to address the appointment of generalist principals, principal and specialist inspectors. Funding was approved, however, but this will only form part of the department's budget vote from April 1 next year. So in 2012-2013, there will be an additional 28 million rand, and 2013-2014, an additional 32 million rand. And that is the 60 million rand that has been talked about to improve the inspector's service. Submissions was also made by the department in the MTF process to increase the number of mobile labor centers, as well as the number of vehicles for inspectors to be made available to carry out their duties. And in this respect, however, funding was not provided through the vote, but there are ongoing discussions with the National Treasury in this regard. During the 2010-11 financial year, the department effected changes to its budget structure. The department is now structured as follows. The four main programs is firstly administration, secondly inspection and enforcement services, thirdly public employment services, and fourthly labor policy and labor market programs. And this from April 1 this year had changed to labor policy and industrial relations, as that branch is no longer responsible for labor market programs. Labor market programs in the old context was covering unemployment insurance as well as skills development. So it has now been aligned to what the current work of the branch takes. And the changes also aim to highlight the core functions of IES and Public Employment Services. Concerted efforts were made by the department to address the 2009 and 10 audit qualification relating to IT assets managed under the department's BBB contract. And in this respect, the department's integrated asset management system, which complies with the requirements of the National Treasury, was utilized to prepare and commit for audit and asset register in respect of all IT equipment managed in terms of the BBB. And in its report now, as I've stated earlier, the Office of the Auditor General expressed an unqualified opinion on the financial statements of the department for the 2010 financial year. This was quite an exercise to put together this asset register of all the IT equipment, and we finally succeeded in having that qualification removed, as it is now full compliance. In respect of the department's public entities, with specific reference to the CCMA and NEDLAC, and in considering the demand for services being placed on these entities, additional funding was allocated as follows. For the CCMA in this financial year, 11-12, an additional 94.7 million was allocated. For the next financial year, 2012-2013, 103.2 million has been allocated. And for the 13-14 financial year, 113.1 million has been allocated. Similarly, in regard to NEDLAC, for this financial year, 6.5 million rand more has been allocated. For 2012-2013, 5.3 million rand. And finally, for 2013-2014, 5.7 million rand additional has been allocated. So that has been allocated to improve the capacity of the two institutions, considering the demand of work that has been placed on those institutions. So in conclusion, Chairperson, we have attempted here to deal with the all of the issues raised in the budget review reports and recommendations, and I'm sure that we will now then deal with any questions that you may have and the committee members may have arising from this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DDG and your team. We will take questions from the members and comments. I'll start with Honorable Masrumu. I have Honorable Olis, Honorable Nyagemba, and Honorable Winamo, and then Honorable Manamela, and then Honorable Khanane. All of us are going to speak to them. Thank you very much, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. just before I raise my two issues, I was listening. I want to say, maybe it's necessary to say to the committee and the committee, it's a nice thing to see we are here back from my permission. Thank you very much. Mr. Kelda and your team.
Kelda.
Thank you very much. Names are going to find how you pronounce it. Because they mean individuals. Thank you. From my school of thought, amongst other medicines that you can use to heal a person is to communicate in the language that they understand. Communication sometimes is not about putting a message across. It's also about healing. When I walk around this in ordinary citizens visiting the labor centers, from where I'm coming from in the rural area, you know what is happening there? The centers are located where there is a tarot only. The centers happen to be located only where there is a tarot. And on the periphery, there are a lot of people who are far away from the tarot. Sometimes when you I don't know what methods you are using to monitor and make sure things are happening, I wouldn't know really, but when I visit the centers on my own, just to watch and see and listen what is happening, I don't know what method you are using to train your staff to communicate with people at that level, people who never given a chance to know how to read and write their names. It's, you need some particular training to communicate with those kind of people. Because, you see, one, much as I would want to appreciate the effort you're putting through, your task is given. But you see, also, it's difficult for me. I don't know how to put it and how to say it. The other time when I was with Communication Portfolio Committee, I tried to talk to Telkom. On the paper, when they say there is a rollout on the paper, you go out, you find a lot of Telkom cars along the tar road only. And sometimes you find them in the bush writing reports. What report? Because they never talk to anybody. They're just driving. Just on the driving screen. And they don't talk to anybody, but they write reports. They submit, we discuss. Only to find that they're discussing nothing. Because when you go out there, where real life is, these things are not there. That's my word. But I'm trying to appreciate what you're trying to offer. On the ground, there is absolutely nothing where I'm coming from. I'm sorry about it, but that's the real thing. It's not American fiction, it's a real story where I am living. These things are not there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It is indeed, the department is about healing people too. Honorable Maslow Mule is right. You get people who are fired from the farms and, you know, all sorts of things, people who were injured and dumped by their employers. It's not only about processing papers, it is about healing, and it's about development, you know, particularly more in rural areas. You know, in that order again.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Just like throughout the revolution, then I'm seeing you did.
Revolutionary greetings to all of you. Mr. Ketildas, did you say the annual report is due tomorrow?
Yes, in terms of the rules, annual reports must be tabled by the 31st of August in Parliament.
Okay, thank you. And do you have any idea when we're going to get the AG's report?
It's part of that.
Part of that. Okay, thank you. Then you said that the reason that there is a larger number of users reflected than actually employed is possibly because we have people with more than one device, a laptop and a desktop and all that. Do we know for a fact what those numbers are, or are we just sort of guessing? Has anybody got a register of laptops and a register of desktops and how many users are on the system and that kind of thing? Because otherwise it's a bit of a guessing game. Are you still experiencing problems with appointments of staff because of the vetting by SACWA and NIA? If you could just tell us if one or both of those organizations are still delaying you, because I remember last year and the year before it was a real problem. You couldn't appoint anybody even though you found very suitable people. It just took too long, and by then they found another job somewhere else where they didn't have to have the vetting. You referred to a whistleblowing policy. Can we get a copy of that document? We have constant debate in the press about whistleblowers and whether or not they are defined as whistleblowers, and I think it would be very useful, Chairperson, if we could see the document. It gives us an idea of what is permissible and not permissible and how whistleblowers are dealt with. And that would be helpful if we could get that document. Sorry, I'm just flipping pages. The problem with the Department of Public Works and the rentals and renovations on offices, we made a request, I think during the term of Mr. Money even, that the DG provincial and regional centres, and for the maintenance on those buildings as well. Can you just tell us whether that did take place, whether we have actually spoken, whether the DG has spoken to the DG, whether the Minister has spoken to the Minister, if you know. Because if you're still having problems, maybe as a committee we could write a recommendation letter to the new Minister. If it's still a problem, we could raise that issue. This amount of 1.2 million for the ILO fees. Now, the ILO fees, if I'm mistaken, is about 6 or 7 million rand, roughly. 1.25 million to cater for exchange rate fluctuation is very high. It's unlikely it fluctuates that much. I mean, it might fluctuate a little. 7.5 to the dollar to 7.2 to the dollar, whatever else. That's not another 1.25 million. Seems like a very large amount just for currency fluctuations.
They are our ears and eyes and the face of the department.
treatment to those who, to most vulnerable workers. Some workers, you know, will afford lawyers. They'll take you to court. But farm workers and domestic workers and beggars, cleaners, definitely not. So, and the other thing I'd like to check is that with all this violence, to the, you know, inspectors and all that, how has that affected service delivery, where you have moved resources from one division to another? How has it affected the delivery of services in terms of our mandate? In that order, members, Honorable Negembo. Honorable Negembo.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Will you hold on? Honorable Khanari,
that's all. In that order, it was very clear what it was.
Honorable Negembo.
Yeah, no, thanks. You thought, but it's not you. thank you very much. My comrades missed me in the last 2 weeks. I think firstly, let's thank the department for coming and present progress in terms of matters that were raised in 2010. Even if it might not necessarily address all the issues that were raised, at least there's something that has happened. That should take further the point raised by Honorable Hollis in relation to that. I know that this is a procedure has to be followed and is enforced by Public Service and Administration Department. Then for me, the point will be to what extent the DG, whoever represented the DG, in the meetings that take place of senior management in different departments of government, to what extent are these delays raised and what are the comments or responses from the relevant departments? Because if I'm not mistaken, SACWA now accounts to the Department of Higher Education and Training, if I'm not mistaken. NIA also accounts to another department. They don't necessarily account to the department that is looking for additional staff. Then the department that is looking for additional staff suffer as a result of those processes, which are also necessary because they were not just put in place for nothing. It's to avoid things, wrong things that might happen in the process. So, but my point is, to what extent are you now, we speak to you as the Department of Labor, engaging this department in terms of the delays? The second point, for me, arrives from the audit performance in terms of the presentation. Declare of business interests by senior management. Fortunately, I also sit in the Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee. Well, I can see here you are talking to a legislation requirement and best practices which you are aiming to enrich. Now, my question is, which legislation? Because declaration of business interest is something that is driven by Public Service Commission. You will get reports from the Public Service Commission about departments that are not responding after the deadlines, and also what kinds of action have been taken by those departments. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Department of Labor is one of those departments. What are you doing about that? And can you explain this legislation as opposed to the mandate of the Public Service Commission? Is it not a duplication? Because for me, if there's a public entity that is responsible for all departments in terms of business interest declaration by senior management, what will necessitate a legislation in another department? The last point, Chairperson, is on committee recommendations in terms of the presentation. The business case and passage of the bill for sheltered employment factories. We know how these sheltered employment factories were operating before, and we know that is something that the department inherited from the then welfare department during those years. But because of the vulnerability of workers in those sheltered employment sectors, then the department saw it fit in order to take this. Can you be a little bit specific? Where are you? This business case and the bill, where are you? Yes, I know that you need to start with the business case first, the structure of the organization, before you can put in place a bill. But I'm interested because the reality of the matter is that these sheltered employment factories, nobody is looking after them except the Department of Labor. Hello, and I'm not sure whether you are also talking to unions. That instead of buying furniture to where they are organized, are they also prioritizing the sheltered employment services? Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Nyagemba. Just a little follow-up on the question of declaration of interest. I heard that it's only senior managers who are supposed to do that, according to them. But what happens to junior officers who are working in procurement, who have influence on procurement processes and others? Are they left out of the loop? And why? If so, why are they left out of the declaration of interest? Who was next? Honorable Buinamo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Kettle does the presentation again is not paginated, but I will just say a page that could be page 4 where you indicate that the department reported a contingent asset to a value of 5 million in the 2009-10 financial year. And this was based on the department's noticing that the unitary fee reflected a larger amount, a number of users than actually employed by Dole. And by 2010-11, the department could not actually disclose the amount, because Siemens was disputing the matter. What I want to find find out here is, this being the case, that this was in 2010, now we're in 2011, have you still not yet established as to how much was it in monetary terms, how much did the department lose? And if still is the case, you don't know, now, are you doing anything to insist that Siemens provides you with the itemized account so that you can know who were those users who were illegal, were not employed by the department, so that that money can be retrieved from them because it is the department's money? Some of the questions here have been answered by my colleagues. Now, the second question that I would ask is, fraud awareness campaign were conducted with various sections and labor centers. Now, the question here is, seeing that the department was aware that fraud was occurring in the department, why was there no investigation against these fraudsters? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Vicar. There was last year, earlier this year, when we engaged with the department, particularly about the Siemens program, the partnership. There were lots of problems with this that were raised by members of the committee. And in your presentation, I'm not picking any of those, except that you only talk about the licenses, that there were more than, you know, actually Siemens was distributing that. We went through an oversight visit there, honorable members, where everywhere we go, there are problems with the IT systems. In the Free State, some offices can't even function, you know, because of this breakdown in communication. People are still using old computers. When we have signed a contract worth 1.9 billion rand, the IT program, this so-called private public partnership, it, according to me, from my observation, and I think this will speak for all members of the committee, we feel that there was no value for our money. You can't use 1.9 billion rand to buy computers and hardware, soft and hardware, but still have a big gap in IT.
And spend 100,000 rand on black for a computer.
If you could say that through the mic so that it gets recorded, I'll indulge you on that one, because just say that on the record.
I'm saying, and also spending 100,000 rand on a black, just a connection to the computer. Like we were told in the Free State that the employee was still waiting for that.
No, but that was a router. It was not just an ordinary plug. And I'm also just thinking aloud, as he was thinking aloud, to say, looking at the breakdown of the Siemens contract, according to my understanding, and I stand to be corrected by the department, is that more money was, I mean, Siemens came in and installed all the infrastructure without the department paying a cent. So it had to get back all the money that they invested at the beginning of the contract. So understanding the contract itself, you can understand why now we'd have old computers and the department is still paying off the money which was invested by Siemens. I think it will assist us moving forward to just look at the entire, for the ones that have not looked at the contract, to see how the break up of the contract came to being, so that we don't just come in and think that the department will just pay this amount of money versus this, and yet Siemens itself invested and put in all the infrastructure in the department before anything was paid by the department?
You know, I think we'll need a discussion on this one at the end before we close this meeting, so that we're able to in a way put closure to the matter. Honorable Hanan, you are the last to speak, and you are the last one to join the committee. You are the last one here. But in terms of protocol, it means you are the most senior person to speak last.
Thank you, Chair. I thank you very much for allowing me to speak properly without having to come through speaking loudly, thinking loudly. All my questions are under committee observations. I mean, your slides are not properly paged, so I can't refer. So I'll speak to the subject rather than the slides. In terms of your approved of posts which are filled, not filled, or others reduced and going to increase again, I just wanted to check whether you have got an approved organogram with the necessary staffing, so that you can be clear about when you say that you are going to increase staffing over the MTEF, is it in line with your approved organogram? And is it are those posts budgeted for? Because people usually say that these are, we have got posts, unbudgeted posts. When you talk about professionalizing the labor inspectorate, what does that mean? What constitutes professionalization of the labor inspectorates? And whether you have got a target, if you are saying you are going to increase their posts, up to what level are you going to increase the posts? And generally, field workers are tempted to abuse their right to be in the field. How do you monitor the? How do you? Do you have a system to monitor this inspectorate so that they can be, and in terms of their input, and whether you have got any record where you can say, look, these are the number of employers who broke the law we caught this year, and these are the record of employers who did not abide by safety standards, and we followed up and we discovered that they've improved, and some of them did not improve in that way. And in terms of the buildings to which you pay rental, don't you have a list of these particular buildings yourself, because you are occupying the buildings? And two, whether you don't have copies of the lease agreements, which has been signed, even if they have been signed with public works, don't you have that? And as a result, you then know how much rental do you pay on each building. And in terms of environment, what percentage of the budget did you apply for environment for which you got? What percentage was it? and the actual amount, apart from the percentage. Thank you.
I think it will be nice, Colonel, that if we get list of the buildings, particularly the labor centers, and how much is paid rental per building. Because it says we go through these buildings, visiting them, some of them look like old storerooms. They look like old workshops that were converted into offices. And if you look at this place, it will even help you to check how much are we paying for this thing that looks more like a pigsty. You know? How much are we paying for this? Are we getting money for? Are we getting value? Are we getting money? Your value for our money? I'll give over to Wenam Nomzan, Nomzan, Manamen. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm worried about the more computers and less number of people, and I think we need to sort that out. It sounded more like a hypothetical kind of, it's a possibility that it's because there may be people who own more. It's not a firm response that this is what's happening. So I think we need something much firmer. And I think more so that we had the presentation from Siemens, which was one of our first, one of my first meetings in the portfolio committee, where there were all sorts of problems. Maybe one of the things we'll have to do is, I think, get a briefing on those issues which were raised at the time around Siemens, and if all those issues have been resolved, and all of that. But I think we need something much better that says there are more computers or laptops or, as compared to the number of users, and this is the reason why this is the case. So that's the first question. The second one is the strategic plan, which I browsed. The strategic objective, which I browsed in the committee report, which was done by the portfolio committee, which I propose is the basis in which implementation of budgets and all of that is based on. I'm asking myself, what is the Department of Labor, for instance, is going to do with intensify the fight against crime and corruption, comprehensive rural development strategy, land agrarian reform. I think this is on page 4. This is on page 4 of the Portfolio Committee on Labor. I suppose it's extracted from your strat plan straight into this report.
Mm-hmm.
What does it have to do with some of those things which I mentioned, the building developmental stage, including improvement of public services and strengthening democratic institutions? It seems more like something that was extracted from someone put here or something like that. It doesn't appear to be a product of a legitimate and genuine internal process of the Department of Labor that generates strategic priorities for a particular period. I mean, yes, you qualified crime internally, which may have, fraud and all those kind of things, but this appears as though it is, ending crime and corruption in South Africa, which is the responsibility of other institutions. So I think I think also moves along the same line as the point Honorable Ollis was raising, that discussion about the strategy, that we will have to have a discussion before it gets glossy and distributed everywhere else, so that we can get a deeper understanding and where possible have an impact on that. And then on the other section on Committee on Public Accounts, I suppose that's when the department went to SCOPA received a qualified report. There's a thing about departmental debt and having used legal services to recover all of those. I just want to get a sense of what debt is, what debt is owed, and all of that. And then the under committee observations, there is a point around vacancy rates, which your projection is that it's going to increase. Now, a pronouncement by the president that by the end of August, which is tomorrow,
that all departments should have filled in vacant posts. And I'm sure, I mean, not all the posts require vetting, etc., etc. Many of senior management that requires that. So do we have an updated report? Because this that we have is March, which is around exactly the same time when the president made the commitment that all of us should have filled vacant posts. And then the final point is, when we review the budget, what are we going to do with the mass and the contribution fund? I understand the internalization from manual and all of that to technology. I'm not suggesting that the problem is money, but if indeed the problem is money, in order to move from that manual process to technology and all of that, you know, is it a consideration? And I think it's one of the things that we will have to zoom into, you know, the problems of the competition. I mean, the compensation fund. We had a discussion with them earlier on, and I think we will have to have a further discussion with them on what is the progress and all of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mohammed. The internal audit, do we brief the minister about outcomes of this? Or do we only brief when the serious audit outcomes that is coming from the AG, you know? Because it is important that the minister need to know what is happening, so she doesn't get surprised when matters are raised only through the, you know, the AG's office. I want to go to the question on debt, internal debt. Debt recovery. How big is this debt? How much are we owed and by whom? And why are we owed that money? The recovery. Are we using debt collectors to collect this money? If so, at what percentage to us? And what does the Debt Collectors Act say about charges, professional fees that are paid to debt collectors? If we are owed by staff who have resigned, what happened to their pensions? Did you give them their pensions even if you know that they were owing you? Weren't those monies deducted from them before they leave, or when they leave? I'm very much interested in this one, members, because you know, in my other life, I worked as a debt collector. No, the pick handle, crowbar collection. and that usually most people will say you collect, that is, you get paid based on your performance. If there's no collection, no pay. So if you don't collect, even if you have a contract, if you don't collect this money, you don't get paid, because you get paid for what you have collected. So let's hear from you.
I think that the one pen will be a game if I don't get it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair.
Over to you.
The CFO will deal with these questions around the debts. Just on the question raised by Honorable Madamela, the issue of the, we are not saying that the vacancy rate is going to increase in terms of the presentation I made. I said the number of posts filled will increase. That is what I'm saying, that the filled posts will increase from the 3,092 in 2010-11 to 3,655 in 2013-14. So we filled the vacancies. So I think the CFO can maybe give an indication as to where we stand with the current rate of vacancies. It was 8.6 at the beginning, at the end of the financial year. Then the issue that Honorable Manamera also raised with regard to these in the document 2.1 on page 4, strategic plans of the department. This is not our document. This is a document put together here. What those bullet points refer to are the 12 outcomes of the medium-term strategic framework. Now, in our strategic plan, we then say, what do we contribute to the achievement of those outcomes? And if you look at the strategic plan, I will just give an example. There is a service delivery outcome that says an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and empowered inclusive citizenship. There we are saying we are contributing in our department by strengthening the institutional capacity of the department. I can use another example where the issue of creating decent employment for inclusive economic growth. There, for example, in our we say that we will contribute by that by promoting equity in the labor market. So that is how we draw the linkages. So the strategic plan is drafted by looking at the MTSS, looking at the five strategic objectives of government, and then we say how do we contribute to those. That is set out in the strategic plan. And while there, dealing with the question raised by Honorable Ollis, we are at present going through a very intensive exercise, sometimes painful exercise, to precisely get to the issue that you've raised, that there is clear targets, that there are measurable things that we are doing, and that is going to be set out in both the strategic plan as we updated for tabling in Parliament this year, but also in what is now required, an annual performance plan in terms of the National Treasury guidance. So we are working through that, and we hope that we will make you jump for joy when you see it, when we table it. Let me start with Honorable Mazrumula. He's left now. He was raised the issue of these centers centers are only located where there are taros. We have precisely introduced the mobile units so that they do go into those areas where there are no tar roads, in remote areas where they can go closer to the people in those deep rural areas so that the services can be accessed by people. Those trucks are furnished with satellite technology so that people can immediately access the information. They can register as work seekers, they can check the status of the unemployment claims, they can check the status of the compensation claims if they are in. So we are taking the services to those people in those rural areas. And as I have reported, we're even seeking to get more of those mobile trucks so that we can have greater coverage of those deep rural areas. And that's the issue that's currently in discussion with the National Treasury to get additional resources to be able to do that. I think the CFO can also deal with the issue of the whistleblowing policy.
The ILO fees fluctuation, it can be both, a lot of this come about as a result of fluctuation. There was a time when the Swiss franc, South African rand fluctuation was like 4-1. It has gone up to 7-1 because of the huge increase in fluctuation, but it can also be a little bit of under budgeting. So it can be a combination of both, but we continuously deal with the issue of fluctuation of the exchange rate. You know, it's not stable, it's a free-flowing exchange rate. The I think the CFO can also cover the vetting issue, the engagements with people, but we are still, I have in my own branch a situation where we had procurators interviews in the 22nd of July, and a month later, we're still waiting for the response. So already there's a month, with NIA. SACWA, I'm not sure about SACWA. This is a bit short. We had an interview on the 16th of August, and we're waiting for both NIA and SACWA. So it just gives you an idea that already 3 weeks to a month, we are waiting for both of them. But whether there's been engagements, I'm not sure CFO may have information around that. The set business case, I can just say that with regard to the response to Honorable Nyakemba, that the bill is in NEDLAC together with the other bills, the Employment Services Bill. And we are working flat out. In fact, there is a meeting on the 1st, which is Thursday, where there will be further discussions in NEDLAC on those bills. And that, of course, is important for us to get the legislative framework for the sheltered employment factories right. The business case, they are running parallel. It's not that we have to wait for the one to finish before the other one kicks in. They are running parallel at the moment. We have no information that unions are procuring from sheltered employment factories. We are trying to get government departments to procure from sheltered employment factories, because that is how they have procured in the past. But because they changed the procurement regulations and stuff like that, government departments are not now only procuring from sheltered employment factories. So we are promoting and encouraging government departments to procure from sheltered employment factories. And of course, one of the positions that we are looking at when we develop the organizational structure for the self-employment factories is a person to do marketing, because that's an important component when you are want to sell things, that you have to have a good marketing component as well in order to take that forward. The on the issue of the Honorable Kanare raised the issue around what does professionalization mean? Do we have an approved organogram? We do. When we do increase staffing, of course it has to be in line with the organogram, because you can't just have posts that are not funded, because then it's meaningless. You can't implement because it's not funded. We even have said that people must do away with what was referred to as frozen posts. Because as the former DG, who is now DG of Economic Development, said that if there is a frozen post, it means that you have no intention of filling it. So we've done away with this category even of frozen post, because you know, it's meaningless for the purpose of utilizing your capacity. Professionalization, we have different areas of operation of especially occupational health and safety. You have mechanical and engineering capacity. You have civils and explosives, civil engineering and explosives. 2019. So there we need to make sure that the people working on occupational health and hygiene, that they are professionally qualified. Mechanical and engineering, you can't have somebody that's been, an artisan's assistant doing inspections in mechanical and engineering areas. Civils and explosives, I mean, explosives by its nature, you can't have a chancer going to investigate the issue of explosives. It may explode himself if he's not properly qualified to do that. So it's to make sure that we have that kind of effective skills for the inspectors across the spectrum of the inspectors. Mr. Maduna will deal with the issue of the buildings, the rentals, all of that, the engagement, ongoing engagement there. The computer issue, the number of devices per person, I think the issue of the compensation fund, this budget doesn't cover the compensation fund because they have their own annual report, they have their own audited statements, but the point that Honorable Manamela raised is that there's probably a need to when the compensation fund or the compensation fund should again come and brief Parliament as to developments with regard to issues that arose in previous discussions. And the debt collecting thing, I think the CFO can deal with it. So Chairperson, I'll give over to the CFO to deal with the other more financial matters that have been raised.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, I think I've quoted their questions probably in some categories. The first one that I will deal with is buildings, public works. I think the other from a category that I've also identified is debt. Triple P, requirement, then we can deal with the remainder. The question as to whether the DG has established their relationship with the Department of Public Works. The answer to that is that yes, he has identified a person in Public Works that we're going to work with. We are in the process of engaging with that particular official to assist. But just to brief the members that this matter is long upstanding and doesn't want to go away. Even the National Treasury have tried to intervene to make sure that Public Works delivers, because from where we stand, Treasury has indicated that we are not the only complainant. So what I can indicate to the committee that I think any assistance when dealing with the Public Works will indeed help. I think I would request the members at least not maybe wait for this internal one, because it has been ongoing and the problem has existed ever since. Public Works is just not coming to the party. So if members are willing to assist to meet the help that they might render, would be very, very helpful. In terms of the list of the buildings and how much we are paying, we commit that information will be made available. Yeah, in terms of whether we do have the copy of the leases, we are compiling the lease register. We are requesting them to provide us with the copies. However, the process is still not finalized. I think they are trying to get their house in order. Meanwhile, on the other side, we are burning, both in terms of our own management and also in terms of the audit issues that we have to deal with. Probably in that engagement with them, we can probably also deal with these issues of their housekeeping, so that we personally, from where I'm sitting, I understand how their housekeeping works, because I'm also very, very waiting to get some documentation from them, and they're just not so responsive. next one is the issue of debt. We do have the debt that we have is the internal one, which means the staff from the department that are all in the department. It mainly arises from one, the breach of contract, wherein we assist officials of the department to improve their qualification to bursaries to various institutions, and there is a bursary policy of which the officials have to comply with should they be unsuccessful in their studies. That is converted into debt, and we then have to enter into an arrangement with the officials to pay back the department in terms of that policy. The other category of debt is salary overpayments, which now and then occurs, wherein our systems are failing us. We are not updating our PESAL system for people when there are changes in their salaries, and we end up maybe paying 1 or 2 months' salaries, which we have to recover. The biggest problem is the subsidized vehicles. The department still has a subsidized scheme for the inspectors to improve their mobility, wherein we, in terms of the transport policy as developed by the Department of Transport, we subsidize the inspectors to the tune of 70% of the installment. We also pay the insurance, we also pay the maintenance. In return, we require that inspectors travel 84,000 kilometers minimum for the funding period, which is almost 4 years, or 21,000 kilometers for a year, or 1,750 for a month. There are problems with inspectors in terms of complying with that. As a result, if they don't comply, we are required to take them out of the scheme, and then we require that amount, that subsidy that we have paid, for them to pay back. Then we record the debt. We then start on the negotiation for them to pay back. Well, there are other categories that are system generated, like the tax one. If you opt for your bonus to be taxed over a period of time, when you get it, depending on the timing on our payroll system, it creates a debt and drives off over a period. But those are small categories. The three main ones that I've mentioned are the major ones. In terms of how much is the total debt, we are currently sitting at 26 million.
No.
There,
four.
In total.
Can you get through the mic so that we have your questions?
Sorry, I beg your pardon. I was just asking what the 26 million debt was for.
I thought you were explaining that.
I don't have the total for each subcategory, but in total.
Mr. Madonna, would you hold on a
minute? No. It's just a request. When the department responds, can we listen if there are matters that we want to further clarity? Can you note them if they are not responding fully to those issues? Rather than interrupting, it's my request. Because it's like the department, whilst we were asking questions, they never interrupted any of us. Can we give them opportunity to respond, and then if they follow us, we do that?
That's been standard meeting procedures, Honorable. Thank you. Continue.
The 26 million is the total amount of debt. I don't have with me here the total the breakdown for each for each subcategory, but that amount that information I have on a monthly basis, and I do analyze in terms of the movement. In terms of the triple P related questions, Siemens, I think here I'll probably take the advice of the honorable member just to maybe give the background on the structure of this contract so that we can maybe put some of the questions into perspective. I think it has been highlighted some time that I think the structure of the contract, the triple P contract, is somehow unusual because it requires, I think there was right at the beginning they identified the services that was that were supposed to be delivered in terms of this contract.
May I interrupt you a little bit, because I said earlier that I think after all the answers are, the questions are answered, maybe we need to deal with Siemens and then, you know, and put the matter to rest. Is this all the questions that you wanted to answer?
No.
So that you give the Siemens one and then we can deal with it there.
Okay. I've grouped them, Chair. But most of them, I think they fall under the triple P contract. There's the other one of environment, which we need to deal with. What percentage of the budget and in rent terms? In terms of what percentage is the environment, and in run terms, I think in run terms we do have it in the presentation, but in terms of what percentage is it in terms of the total budget, we can provide it after the presentation, because I think you just need some few calculations. In terms of the internal audits, do we brief the minister?
Internal audit reports directly to the Director General in terms of the accountability and responsibility, and of course the Director General have regular meetings with the minister. I'm not sure whether this is one of the issues that he reports on, but internal audit reports directly to the Director General.
In terms of, I think there's some few questions that were left out. Debt, how much would we owe in the debt collectors, what percentage? For the staff that has resigned in terms of their pension. In terms of how much it is, I've also alluded to it, by who. In terms of debt collectors, we are in the process of reviewing that in terms of our own internal policy from finance. Whenever debt has to be collected, we then liaise with our legal department, we then assist. We haven't used the debt collectors for now, but that's the proposal that I will have to going forward discuss with my accounting officer. For the staff that have resigned, yes, we do collect them from the pension fund, except to say that the pension fund has now got rules. I think they can't withhold more than 10,000 rands. And unfortunately, if the debt is more than 10,000, they're going to pay us up to 10,000, which means that the person will still have to owe us the balance, which we still have to follow up. But also to mention that I think quite some of the problems that we have here is our systems, that some of the debt accumulate interest. And due to the long processes in terms of collection, you will find that we'll request 10,000 rand from the pension fund in terms of the debt. But because they're going to settle the debt 6 months or 7 months later, it's no longer 10,000. It's 12,000. It's 10,000 plus maybe interest, for example, of 2,000. So they will only pay us the 10,000 that we initially requested, but that would have been 6 months or 7 months before. Then we'll still be remaining with this debt of 2,000, right, which is purely interest, which we still have to chase in most cases with the official. Those are the challenges that we are dealing with.
They are still answering.
Yeah.
They're still answering the questions. Maybe they will come to your questions. Let's give them the chance.
Declaration of interest in terms of the junior staff. Currently, there's no legislation that requires the junior staff to declare their interest. However, the staff that are involved in the supply chain management, in terms of the code of good practice, they are required to declare their interest on the work that is currently, on the work that they are dealing with. That's what is currently available. I understand that DPSA is currently reviewing the whole declaration of interest process. We are awaiting for the outcome of that process to see whether there will be any changes that the department will be required to implement. Yeah, also with those, not only also on those on the junior staff, on the procurement process, we've got various committees that sit over and above declaring interest annually. If ever within the committee that's supposed to adjudicate a particular tender or are involved in the procurement of a particular service or goods, if ever there is interest that needs to be declared, it is required of an official to do exactly that. Fraud awareness campaigns, why no investigations? There are investigations whenever there is or fraud has been detected, but just to maybe to highlight to members that we encounter most of this to the operations of the UIF and compensation funds, because that's where they are dealing with cash most of the time. Yes, even for the department in terms of procurement, but we are encountering this particular problem on the operations of the UIF and CC. More so that when you go to the labor centers, the operations are combined in terms of the UIF compensation fund and the department. So if ever it's detected, if ever there's any fraud that is detected, it is investigated and dealt with accordingly. I think as a matter of fact, the the DG announced in terms of, I think there was something that was detected a few weeks ago in the Eastern Cape that is currently in the process of being processed.
There's just one other question, Chairperson. There's a category of questions dealing with the triple fee and the Siemens that I think you want to deal with last. But just for Honorable Khanare, the one question that we didn't deal with was what system to monitor the inspectors, how many employers broke the law, are there any records? We do have that. We have records setting out how many undertakings had been secured. Now, let me explain the inspection process works in a way where if an inspector finds an employer has violated the law, the inspector would secure an undertaking by that employer to correct the violation. If the so there's then a record of how many such undertakings have been secured. Secondly, if an undertaking has not been made good, the inspector can then issue a compliance order. So we also have a record of how many compliance orders have been issued for whatever legislation, because they inspect across all of the legislation. And then failing compliance with a compliance order, the inspector can then take that to the labor court to have that compliance order made an order of court. So we do have records as to how many workplaces have been inspected. We know what the level of compliance is. The percentage is always stated, and it will be in the annual report again. And we have records of how many undertakings and compliance orders have been issued across the various pieces of legislation. So the records are there. Similarly, with occupational health and safety incidents, we have records that indicate how many fatalities there had been in which sectors of the economy and how many injuries or incidents there had been reported in terms of the occupational health and safety legislation. So we have those. Thank you, Chairman.
So I think we have dealt with all the questions except the ones that relate to the triple P contract.
That's it, honourable members. Are there follow up questions, or do you think somebody feels that their question wasn't answered? This is the time. Honourable Ellis.
Just quickly, I'm not sure if they did answer, but do they have a copy of the whistleblower policy here, or can they send it to us? Thank you.
Yeah. May we go into the Siemens issue now, so that we close with that one?
Thanks.
Why have we paid 1.9 billion rand, but still we've paid more than R1 billion. I'm not quite sure about the point something. But it was said ultimately it would be when this contract ends, we will have paid 1.9. Mm-hmm. Now it was 1.2. Anyway, R1 million is quite a lot, particularly if you paid and then you still don't have computers working. That's something else.
I think we'll go back to the theory of the whole triple P contract, the way it was set up. In our financial statement, we've got a detailed note. In this year's annual report is note number 28, which tries to summarize some financial specifics on the triple P contract. But by and large, the triple P contracts, in terms of the triple P contracts, some items were identified to be delivered. One of them is the initial services, in which case all the IT related activities of the department were handed over to the PPP partner to run up until the end of the contract. The other category that was identified is the improvement services, where the PPP partner was required to put new systems to make the department run efficiently. And the third one is the operational services, where they were going to provide services, they were going to provide capacity for the IT-related equipment to function. The major flaw with this contract was that there were no milestones over the 10-year period. It was going to be the arrangement between the program manager and the PPP partner as to when things happen. I think that was the major flaw. This is the major flaw that happened. As a result, now that we are approaching the end of the 10-year, that's when we are experiencing backlog or identifying some things that has not been delivered. And as such, it is just difficult. We are at the stage where in some cases it's just difficult for the PPP partner to deliver. In case they haven't develop a system for the remaining from now until November 2012, how many months? For the remaining 14 months, if they haven't developed a system, the chances are that system is not going to be delivered. That's where I think honorable members is going to be quite critical for the department, because I think once there were no milestones, it provided some sort of a checklist at the end of the contract to say you were supposed at year one, you were supposed to put systems. Have you put them, yes or no? If the answer is no, then it becomes a problem, because we'll then talk to the unitary fee to say once they've identified these three categories of services to be delivered, it was then attempted to cost those items and then develop an amount that's going to be paid from year 1 to year 10 for those services, whether or not they've been delivered in year 1. So we talk about that's where the unitary fee comes in, to say the amount that we paid right from year 1 included all these services were costed in there, but there were no milestones for delivery. So the question of 1.something billion is when you calculate the amount that we need to pay in terms of the unitary fee. But there were no attempts to match those amounts in terms of on a yearly basis what need to be delivered. However, at year 10, you can easily do that, because you can then say, have you done 1, 2, 3, then you tick. For those that have not been delivered, we'll have to then enter into a negotiation, one, to determine how much it was costed at the beginning. Probably that's where we'll have to get some refunds from the PPP partner. That's where we are at the moment. In terms of the users or contingent assets, since the contract provided for the initial services, which means all the computers that were there on the start of the contract that were bought by the department were handed over to the PPP partner for them to manage, maintain, replace when necessary. But the problem is that we are dealing with a situation which is not static. The department had to increase the establishment as it goes along. So at the start of the contract, we had 4,600 users who had computers when the contract started. And the contract provided that the department can increase the number up to 6,000 without looking at the increase in the unitary fee. That did happen. There was a process to request additional computers from the PPP partner in case the computer packs up. if it wasn't, there are two issues. There is the replacement part, when if the computer fails car, it's a replacement of the existing computer. But if the new employee is employed and you need a new computer, then it's an additional computer which is going to increase the number of the users up to 6,000 before the unitary fee is increased. So the problem arose with the result of the contingent asset in terms of when we counted the computers that were there in the department vis-a-vis the users, there was a discrepancy. It already the 6,000 number that was prescribed in the contract has been exceeded, subsequent to which the PPP partner requested the increase in the unitary fee for every 100th number of users. So when we did that exercise to try to reconcile, there was a discrepancy. In terms of knowing the users, yes, it has been a qualification that the department has been dealing with. Subsequently, we counted every item that is there in the dual environment, and we got the IT asset register now that the Auditor General is happy with. Hence, we are able to deal with the qualification. But we still have to reconcile the number of users right from the beginning, because I feel that I think there was a discrepancy in terms of the replacement and the addition. That's the reason why in the year 2009-10, there was a discrepancy in terms of the number of users and the user and the devices that we have. That's the reconciliation that we are busy engaging in as we speak. Now that we know exactly who has got the computer, we need to go back, probably go back 1 year, just to see what was the relationship between the additions to employees vis-a-vis the additions to the devices.
Just unfortunate that Honorable Makhubele Mashe is not here, because she was raising a point that I thought it would be more important to raise it now when this matter is under discussion. You said that the contract was signed, and then after 10 years then you checked. What is this that is done and what is this that is not done? There were no,
milestones.
Yeah, no milestones. I mean, how do you sign a contract with those millions without any performance measure? I mean, I find this very strange. I know people who run spaza shops in my village and the township. And I think even spaza shops have milestones to say, you know, before Christmas I need to have made this much money so that I can pay for my children's clothes for Christmas and the party and uniforms next year. And at this level, with such skills that we have in the department, still you sign contracts without no milestone, which means that, you know, you're not going to be able to monitor if we are achieving what we are supposed to achieve. And without milestones, it will mean that anything that the person we have a contract with, whatever they say, how do we even think of moving out of the contract? How are we going to see that people are not performing if there are no milestones? But I think this is, maybe this matter might have served before me, I mean, no, before I came into the committee, you know. So I don't want us to reopen something that was closed, if it was entertained to those levels, so that we don't go post-mortem after post-mortem. And I like to be advised by the members who were here before me to say,
do we have a case to discuss here, or should we just say we close this thing and go? Because I remember in the last meeting that we, when we discussed this thing, I said that from my layman's, I don't know what layman means anyway. Okay, let me see from where I was seated then. I think this was daylight robbery, that we was robbed. You know, and that a matter like this one, it needs to be referred to professional people, and the professional people are the police. So I think I'll need first an advice from members who are here before me, so that if this matter was dealt with and closed, so that we just close it and move on. Honorable Lewis.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have discussed this when you came back. I've been here for
10 years.
Well, I don't know. almost 3 years, I think. And we've about every 6 months had this matter come to this committee.
Okay.
And I think certain things have been accepted by both members of the committee and the department. The first one is that there were no proper targets put in the original contract. We agree that was not done. It was a big mistake. During the director generalship of Mr. Manyi, he pointed out that he put in a committee in place to sign off every month the payment, and unless certain targets were met in that month, then Siemens wouldn't get their payment. I don't know whether that still continues, but there was a thing put in place at that point because there were just no milestones and no targets agreed. And I think we also agreed in the committee that the contract was badly drafted in the beginning, and also that in many of the offices of the department, the computer system are not working well, particularly because equipment is getting old, and also because Siemens subcontracts the maintenance in the rural areas to somebody else. And that somebody else is very difficult to control. It's another company, or many other companies, I don't know. I think we agreed that as well. And then we also agreed there would be an exit strategy to get out of this thing at the end and plan so that in future we don't have the same circus again. I think that's also agreed. But I think that we also agreed some money has been wasted because we could have done a better job. My only comment was that one about that router in the Free State, and that is it. They told us when we were on the Overside visit that the one router to connect two PCs to the network cost 100,000 rands. Now, I don't know whether it's a specialized router, but if it's not a specialized router, it should cost maybe 1,000 or 3,000 or 5,000, but 100,000 rand seems excessive. And we would just wonder if it wasn't a rip-off, that we were given a Rolls Royce and we only needed the Ford Cortina version. Thank you, Chuck.
Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you, Chair. I think the other issue that we picked up was how the unbundling itself, because sometimes we normally think that if a company is unbundling, it's unbundling for a good purpose. And when we raised these matters with the answer to the department, because it appeared that the triple P, there's an intention of banking against, no, they must be very careful on that one. It mustn't happen within the lifespan of this contract, because if that happens, that will mean now it will be difficult even to terminate the contract when it comes to an end. But I think the one key issue that we raised with the department was the 12-month notice before the actual contract get expired. That notice, where Siemens need to be noticed, we said that that need to be done. And I think the other point that was raised was the non-responding the obstinance on matters of maintenance when this equipment is down. This thing of the department staff just to say because I made a call, so therefore you can't trace when the query was raised. It makes it difficult even to terminate the contract before its expiry date. So those were the areas that we raised. Because there was a time where compensation fund decided to use compensation of mines?
And
mutual assurance. We then saw that system being very good. Why then don't we do away with cements and then follow that? Then what was picked up was that, no, even if we do that, that would mean there would be double pay because you still have to pay cements in terms of the contract, and then there would be another payment now to run mutual assurance. So those are not, but if my memory serves me well, it's done some time this year. I don't know whether it's February or March, but I think somewhere there, the meeting we had with the department at E249, was that there's a need, a discussion between yourself and the minister, and the DG, of if there are investigations that are required on the whole cements issue itself, then let it be. But as the portfolio committee, we are not investigating, let those institutions that are given that responsibility be approached if it means we need to. Thank you.
So we are still within the limits of order when we discuss this. This matter was never resolved. Is it like that,
Chair, I don't know what you mean by resolved.
The matter is closed.
But the resolution of the matter, in my understanding, there's nothing that stops us to ask questions in terms of operation and other things that do appear. But to terminate the contract, then we don't have grounds to say let the contract be terminated.
Thanks, Honorable Honore.
Chair, but it doesn't, there is a contract. And if there is a contract, there is supposed to be certain deliverables in terms of that contract. The department can sit down and do some sort of an audit of whether what the contract expected from Siemens has been delivered by now. And if it has not been, the deliverables have not been delivered, the department can list that and say to Siemens, we paid you so much for you to do the following. You have not done it. And Siemens can be, on the basis of that, urge you to say, this is the contract we have delivered based on what the contract says. So we are able to argue from an intelligent position about what happened. And the best way to solve this problem, Chair, is for the department and Siemens to appear before this committee so that each party can put their position very clearly. They have signed a contract. The contract must be saying something.
I think I like the sound of that.
Because, you know, what worries me is not... it's not what has happened in the past. It's if the department doesn't see anything wrong in signing a contract without any deliverables, you know, what are the possibilities of them signing another contract without those deliverables? Because we're talking about the same department, nothing has changed. It's still the same Department of Labor. Maybe people might have changed.
I don't know if you were there during that time when the contract was signed. The CFO and management, you're still talking about the same management. There could have been some few changes with the new TG, you know. But my worry is about the future, you know, because we look at our past to chart a way forward, to say, where are we going? You can't know where you are going if you don't know where you're coming from. Otherwise, you'll end up going to the same place, calling it a new place, you know. So that is where my main worry is. You know, I think we should move towards closing this meeting. Let me give up.
Could I just take in that proposal of Honorable Kamara that we invite Siemens to come in, just brief us on why they think the contract went wrong? I mean, we've never heard from them in 8 years or something. We've never heard from Siemens themselves. And you, as the chairperson of this committee, have the power to require them to come. It's in your power actually to do that. You can, as Parliament, we can summon anybody in the country, and we could invite Siemens to come and do a presentation. Maybe we learn something out of this process. But they've never answered to us. Yeah.
Were there no attempts, for instance, to call them when? Were they ever called to come and explain? Didn't they?
I also wanted to probably give the members another piece of information that might also be useful, to say that the National Treasury, they've got a unit, the PPP unit, which was the one who was driving this type of contract. So the Department of Labor was not alone in entering into this contract. It was I'm told that it was a guinea pig from the National Treasury in terms of experimenting the PPP in government with the Department of Labor. So if ever the Department of Labor has to answer on this, on the thinking of the contract, I would think that the National Treasury, the PPP unit, will have to share their thinking or their thoughts when the contract was drafted, more especially on the milestone part.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if you're going to, you see, when something is done on your behalf, it means the responsibility lies with you. If you manage a contract that doesn't have milestones, what does it say about you? You know, because it means then you did not read the contract. Yeah. Because all contracts, particularly with deliverables, you know, literally delivering, because you need a truck to deliver computers. May even literally mean that, you know, that there must be somewhere where you know how many computers do we need, how many points or whatever cables that are needed. You can actually say this is how much the project is going to cost, and this is how many years it's going to take. I'm not a program manager, but I've worked before. I know that these things are doable, and that we've got very educated people in the department. Yeah. Very educated. But if they're unable to read a contract, what use is that education? What use are those skills if the skills are not helping us to attain what we want? Then we may as well get people from high school to come and run the department, because the mistakes that people are doing are schoolboy and schoolgirl mistakes. Let's have schoolboys and schoolgirls to come and run the department. At least we'll understand why we have this kind of mistakes. It's because we appointed the wrong people. We appointed students. But we appointed professionals with lots of degrees and many years of experience of working. But if this is the kind of experience of work that we call experience of work, then we are in trouble. I think we need to work towards putting this Siemens mentor to rest, and that we
Luvo, if you could just go through the minutes of the meetings that we held where we discussed the Siemens thing, and then advise me on what were the recommendations coming from members on way forward, because I remember I actually talked about the police, you know, the SIU, because those are experienced people, you know, who've got capacity to do this. We don't have that capacity to investigate these things. It's not even our responsibility. Our responsibility is that if we have a suspicion that there is something, then we ask somebody to do that for us, you know. This matter was, I remember saying that, I don't know, maybe I might have dreamt about it, so go through all the minutes and our reports and pick that up. And Cindy, please, if you could help on this one, when it's, so that, because I want this matter to be, you know, so that next year we don't talk about Siemens anymore. If there are problems, let us have no problems. And I hate problems that involves money. And we paid, but still people are having problems with computers. You see, if the computers were working, I'll say, yeah, well, it was an administrative thing. But here, how do you use more than 1 billion rand for computers and still you don't have computers that are working? From my layman's, you know, suspicions, I'm suspecting that there is something fishy. Thank you very much. Do you have, Honorable Khanari, before I close, because I don't think we'll deal with this matter forever and ever.
Well, I don't want us to deal with the matter forever and ever. But what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that there might be two components. There might be suspicions which you are having, which is not our area of competence. But to exercise oversight, is our area of competence. And I believe, I'm not saying we should investigate because something has gone wrong. I'm saying we must investigate because a contract is there,
yeah,
and somebody was supposed to deliver, and somebody has not delivered in terms of the Department of Labor. And to the CFO, my understanding of the portfolio committee is that sometimes it helps you. I know that there is this impression that members of parliament are arrogant and they shout at people and all that. And sometimes, it's not accusing. I mean, my suggestion was not to accuse the department to say that they have done something wrong. It's to say there is a contract. Siemens might not have delivered, from what you are saying. Siemens might say that they have delivered. What we want is to say, where have they not delivered so that they can deliver? Is actually assisting you to be able to get that out. If there is a crime committed, that's another route to check. We can suggest that the SIU and everybody else who has got the capacity to investigate criminal activities must do that. But we, ours is really this particular concept. And even if the department, National Treasury, was involved in the process, they might come here because I'm aware that when this PPP became fashionable some time ago, everybody talked as if this belief in private sector being efficient and all that, people were making noise about it. And some people used it. I mean, this concept of throwing the javelin came together with this triple P, where officials within the department would enter into a PPP and they become CEOs of those companies when they leave, after their contract. Those things have happened. And I know that National Treasury also learned some lessons from the whole processes, because it was not only with you. I think Department of Health and a lot of other, even provincial governments, they also learned a lesson out of this particular situation. So my own position, Chair, is just to say there is a contract. Somebody has delivered or has not delivered. How do you make sure that the delivery takes place as far as that particular contract is concerned? That's, I'm not going to speak again. Your word is final.
Only if I agree with what you have said, I know. I know you.
No. I'm just saying that we need to be informed by the past meetings so that we get a summary of resolutions or recommendations that came out of meetings before we were in and even after we came in as this new committee. So that will guide us even in our engagements with the minister, because then we need to say these are the questions that we ask. This is the information we requested. I think there was even a request for a contract estimate that it should be given to the chairperson to look at. I don't remember ever getting that contract. So that if we do this audit of what are the questions, and in relation to this, and what kind of answers do we get? Did the answers answer the questions that we've asked? I think that is very important. Then, in that vein, I'll say thank you very, very much. Unless if you want to say something else, if before I close the meeting, is there anything from you?
No, check. No, but I think we've made note of the whistleblowing policy, a copy of which must be submitted to you. And I think the CFO had also indicated that he would provide a breakdown of the debt, the categories of debt, and how much each of the categories, and the list of the buildings and how much the rentals are for those buildings.
Can you just maybe check if the in the list of the debtors, are they senior managers who are owing the department money? I think that is very important. So, if you can, input that senior managers, this man, I'm not saying give us the names, but if he doesn't, so that we know senior managers are running the department like that. The department like a machonisa. We are not machonisas here. Thank you very much. Thanks for attending the meeting. And thank you very much. Bye bye. Meeting closed.
Sorry, members.